Welcome to the Capital Club Podcast. I'm your host, Brian Adams. Every week, we bring on some of the brightest leaders around the world to discuss issues facing high net worth individuals and family offices today. Hello and welcome to the Capital Club Podcast. Today, I have with me Lance Welch. Lance has been married for over 36 years, has three grown sons and two grandchildren. Lance is a business and legacy coach and just released his first book, The Legacy Navigator, in early March. Lance, thanks so much for joining us today.
Oh, great to be here. Looking forward to it.
Always fun to have somebody in my own backyard joining the show. It's always a treat as another Nashville person. You know, I was thinking about this last night on my plane ride home. I've been out of town all week. There was a medical incident. They had to ask if there was a doctor on the plane and the whole deal. It ended up being not a false alarm, but it was okay. But it kind of made me think about legacy, right? Like if this person had called it on that flight, pretty unexpected, obviously, from her perspective. I don't know. I've been reflecting on legacy. It's a term that gets thrown around a lot. And I think for a lot of us, especially folks that work in the ultra high net worth family world, it's lost a lot of meaning, I think, in a lot of ways, because it gets overused. How do you define it yourself?
And there's so many different definitions out there. But I remember one, it was probably about 20 plus years ago when I was still in the financial services space. There was a speaker that made a comment about it that has always stuck with me. And it's that thing that refuses to be buried when you are. So it's short, sweet, simple, to the point. But it just kind of hit home that it, you know, whatever you are doing right now, that's your legacy. So that's where the whole concept of the book is. You've got a default or an intentional legacy.
Yeah, I like that part. You know, you were kind enough to share the book with me beforehand. And this is a term or a saying that gets used in different variations, but something along the lines of, you know, make sure that you're controlling your story, because if you're not, somebody else is doing it for you.
Right.
And as a recovering attorney, I always tell young people, you know, especially when they get married, you need to go and have a will done. And they say, oh, like, I don't have many moving pieces. It's not complicated, et cetera. I say, listen, when it happens, you have a will already. You just don't realize it. And it's dictated by the state of Tennessee or wherever you wherever you're domiciled. Right. So if you really want the state of Tennessee to dictate what happens to all your stuff, which I doubt, then you need to take control of that yourself. And that's kind of the parallel that I would draw here.
Yeah. Yeah. There's some statistics in the book from a couple of different sources that did a study on that very topic. And it was really surprising. You know, the people that were in the study had a minimum net worth of $4.5 million. You know, so it's not ultra high net worth, but you would think at that level, they have done all the necessary planning. But what they found in those two different studies is it ranged anywhere from 55% to as high as 68% did not even have that basic will that you just described. It's really surprising.
Yeah, the business and succession plan of immortality is not a great one. So... Well, let's get into the book. When I always ask people that come on the show that have a book, because I realize just how laborious it is. What was the motivation? What was your why behind going on this journey?
Man, well, yeah, first of the year, I always do my pre-year planning. This book was not anywhere on the radar January of 23. My son is pretty big in the internet marketing space. He got a big following, big platform. And I'm transitioning away from a previous career building a coaching business. And I remember asking him, you ought to provide me some referrals. You ought to set dad up. Give me some coaching client opportunities. And he's like, you just need to give me some content. I need to be able to point people to something other than, hey, work with this guy. He's my dad. And so it kind of morphed into, okay, maybe it's a book. Maybe that's what he's looking for. And first thought was I'm going to write it on sales. I very first started in sales way back in college. So I was definitely many years ago, but it was selling china and waterless cookware door to door. So that was my launch into a sales career. Very challenging, obviously. I didn't get very far on the sales topic. So the next thing I thought, well, I'm going to write it on leadership. John Maxwell is my mentor, my coach in his organization. He's been named the leadership guru of the world. So I'm thinking, I love leadership. I'm going to write on that. Didn't get the traction on that either. But once I settled on, well, maybe it's going to be legacy, because that has always been my passion, is to make sure that my boys have a much better opportunity leading into their lives than what I did. And once I settled on that as a topic, I literally had no trouble coming up with content. Didn't have to do a whole lot of research. It was just one of those things. I just started going back through the archives of, you know, my own life. I mean, we got married young, got pregnant early, and just started building a family. So once I landed on legacy, it was lights out.
And that's such a nice moment when it's not pulling teeth and it's just something that naturally flows. But what was it about the concept and your own journey where you would be able to marry the experience and the venue of the book to inform people what you've learned throughout your own journey?
I think it's probably that what we mentioned earlier, that everyone does have, they all have a legacy. Kind of like what you said, everyone has a will. It's just a matter is it one they created, or did the state create it for you from being intestate? But recognizing the fact that everyone had a legacy and everyone has a choice, and it's really inconvenient to set aside time to invest in a legacy. But all my years in working with the high net worth families, those that didn't prepare, they were inconvenienced the most. You know, so we have that choice. I know Steve Harvey has a phrase called choose your hard. Mine is choose your inconvenient, because you're going to be inconvenienced if you want to create a positive legacy. Your family is going to deal with the greater inconvenience if you don't plan for one. So that was really the impetus on it. I traveled a lot in the early years of my career. And so when I was home, I knew I had to be incredibly intentional. And someone asked me the other day, I did an interview on the book, and they said, if you could sum up the book in one word, what would it be? And didn't even have to think. The very first word that came about was intentional. So I was intentional that when I was home, I was doing things that was intentionally building relationships, maintaining the relationship with my wife. We've been married 36 years this past January. So that is a big feat. And just hope that answered your question.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That's helpful. What are kind of the key themes or takeaways there? I'm not going to ask you to do it in one sentence, but what's the general thematic overture, if you were, of the book?
You know, dealing with or getting to work with high net worth families all those years, the number one thing that I was asked to do was to partner with their professional advisors. I was in the insurance and financial space. So the main thing that I worked with them on was to help offset the tax structure. They had legal documents, they had attorneys, professional advisors that would help minimize it, but there was no way to completely get rid of the taxes. So we put up the life insurance side. We came in with that as a strategy to help offset that. From that perspective, every client that we worked with, every family we worked with, it was like that was the only thing they discussed was, how do we deal with transferring wealth? How do we make sure that the wealth we've created makes it to the next generation? And, you know, you'll see in the book, the vast majority of wealth never makes it to the second and third generation. You know, and there's some statistics on why that happens. But what I found was when families worked on some other areas, they were able to perpetuate wealth. And that's where we talk about in the book, the four legs of the legacy table. And those legs are, when we focus on the other three legs, the fourth leg, which is wealth transfer, is actually pretty easy. But the first leg is the transfer of vision. Second leg is transfer of values. Third leg is the transfer of knowledge. And then finally, we transfer wealth. So when we focus on those first three legs, it really makes the fourth leg of transfer quite simple.
And Is that also the cadence, you think, of, you know, if you're someone like me, I'm 41, my boys are 11 and 8, like, is that the order of operations that I should think about, or can it just depend on the situation and the circumstance?
It really depends on the situation, but I love the format that it's laid out in is in that vision, values, knowledge. There's this concept for me anyway, it's without a vision, the people perish. So I feel like having a vision of what you want to accomplish, what does the end result look like? Do you have a clear picture of what you want that end result to be? When you know that, you can begin to reverse engineer just about any problem. The solution to it is reverse engineering, deciding what you want on the back end. So vision is the very first thing that I look at. But what's interesting, to define your vision, you have to have a really good understanding of what are your core values. And there's a really good exercise. One of the chapters talks about it specifically, called the core values exercise. And in the appendix, it's got how do you do it. But as a family, the short version of it is, as a family, when you and your wife, or if you're a single parent, when you identify the core five family values, you then have the raw material to create a compelling vision. And when you know those two things, even if you didn't do the other two, the trajectory of your family is going to change just from those two perspectives.
Yeah, you've got a really nice kind of rubric or process in the book where at the end of each chapter, you've got a reflection that distills down the main takeaways from the chapter, and then implementation or, you know, some homework you can do to put those into action, which I think is really helpful. Where do you find most people struggle the most out of those pillars?
Getting started. I think the number one challenge is people don't know where to start. And when there's any level of confusion, they do nothing. You know, even from the sales side, back in the sales days, is if I presented a client too many options, they would do nothing. So the whole premise of this book really is, like you said, it's set up to keep it simple. And it has the reflections so that you will see, these are what I think are the highlights of the chapter. You may, as you're reading it, you may find other things that are a highlight, and that doesn't make me wrong and you right, or vice versa. But the real power of that is the implementation part. Back in the day, I knew, I'd always heard that leaders are readers. So I had set a goal that I was going to be a massive reader because I want to be a great leader. So I set goals. I was going to read at least 50 books a year. And I did that for years. But what I didn't do well was implement anything I was reading. So this book is designed to not just give people resources, not just to keep them entertained, but to take pauses at the end of each chapter and give them a reason to slow down and implement some of these things. That's where change happens, right?
Yeah. And I think your point is a good one. We read these things, right? Like, I read the preview you sent me and your outline. I thought, man, this is really powerful and good. But then I go check email, or then a phone call happens, or I realize, gosh, I forgot to do that thing. And in my experience, this is the power of having a third party come in and really force you to carve out and dedicate time and space. Because even big institutional family offices, if you ask folks, what are your two or three core values? It's probably a lot of blank stares, right?
I would bet money on it.
Yeah. And then how do you prioritize your focus if you don't know what your values are? And how do you define output or, you know, quality product deliverings if you don't have values to cement on top of them? So right. What are some thoughts that you might have about kind of practical steps to put this into practice?
Well, you know, what we're talking about really is working with the high net worth or the ultra high net worth. And, you know, there's two different parts to the book. Towards the back, I think it's chapters probably 12 and 13. One is called a family vision cast, and the other is called a legacy retreat. And the biggest difference between a family vision cast and the legacy retreat is the length of time and the depth that you go. The Legacy Retreat is really designed for those families that have multiple businesses, probably, and they probably have family members that are inside of those various businesses. And like you said, there's everybody does have a core value. They have a value matrix that they operate out of. They probably, unless they would have me or you or someone to come in and ask that question, they probably haven't gone to the inconvenience of defining what are our values. But think about the matriarch, patriarch that is, they've spent the last 50 years, 60 years developing these businesses. I guarantee you they've operated out of a value base. But if they haven't been intentional on communicating it to the downline, to the heirs, those incredibly powerful values could be missed. They could be lost. They could be misunderstood. You know, so that's where, you know, getting started is just, first of all, having an awareness that there's something you want to pass along, and you cannot assume that everyone knows what that is.
And unless you do that self-work, it's going to be really hard to get anyone else to come on board with you.
Right.
Which is where I think a lot of leaders struggle, because they're, especially men, because they're so action-oriented that to take the time and space necessary to reflect on this can be uncomfortable. And it feels like you're not, quote-unquote, doing anything.
Right. Right. And then I'm sure you've seen there's been a lot of families that they've got multiple businesses. And one of the patterns I've noticed over the last probably decade or two, a lot of the matriarchs, patriarchs, the seniors, the elders, they don't trust that next generation or maybe two generations down to be able to step in and fill their shoes. And you know what? I would agree with them. They're at 100% correct. That's more reason, though, to begin to release control now, to begin to mentor, to disciple, whatever word you would want to use, rather than continue to hoard the control. You know, there's a quote in there, I don't remember the name of it, but the guy said that hoarding information is a tyrannical event. And it really hit hard. It's like, how many times do we own a particular piece of intellectual capital and we don't even share it with our heirs? What happens when, if I pass away and I haven't developed that next generation? They're going to step in and now they're going to try to wing it, doing something that I spent the last 3 or 4 decades doing, and I expect them to just figure it out in 12 months. It's a real challenge.
Huge challenge. What is the difference between impact and influence?
Oh, wow. That's a good one. I remember, influence is based on relationship. Impact is creating change. And the best way for me to create impact, especially within my family, is to really be strong in the influence. I remember a number of years ago within our family, won't get into details, but one of my boys had done something I wasn't really pleased with. And I wanted to come down hard because it's my nature, type A personality, strong-willed. I'm going to fix everything. In my younger days, it was more of a kill them all and let God sort them out type of mentality. But I remember really being convicted that without relationship, I will have no influence. And if I have no influence, I have no hope of creating impact. So they do flow and interchange well, but they are definitely a different word.
Exceptional family offices, family enterprises, wealth management, and financial services organizations require superior leadership to successfully thrive in today's competitive environment. This is why I'd like to introduce you to our new sponsor, Mac International. Mac International is recognized as the premier boutique firm that specializes in providing retained executive search and strategic human capital consulting solutions to single and multi-client family offices, family enterprises, and the full spectrum of wealth management advisory, investment management, and financial services firms that serve ultra-high net private investors and family offices on a national and international basis. If you're interested in learning more about Mac International, visit their website at macinternational.com. I think that's right. And it's very difficult to get to the heart of it. But how does that relate to the ability to create this legacy beyond just, I don't know, the typical metrics we use to gauge success in business, right? You know, profitability, revenue, employees, assets under management, et cetera, et cetera. Like, how do those two things work hand in glove with this broader theme of creating a legacy that endures beyond just how many widgets you get out the door?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think, you know, a lot of people will look at legacy as something, as like I said earlier, they look at it primarily as this is a wealth transfer strategy. It is so much more than that, right? If it's only about wealth transfer, there are so many things that you can do. I mean, you being a former attorney, you know, there's no limit to the creativity of how I can structure documents to restrict access to the assets. I can put all sorts of hindrances to them. I can also put bonuses, right? I can put, if you get your college degree, if you get married, you get a bonus, you get this or that. But that is a very narrow view of what legacy is, in my opinion. That's where the other three legs of this, of the legacy table, of this whole legacy piece comes to together, is understanding that wealth transfer is just one piece of the puzzle. And for anyone that only focuses on that, they are going to be possibly, statistically, they're going to fall into the shirt sleeves to shirt sleeves in three generations. I'm sure you're aware of that quote and that phrase. Absent proper planning with vision, values, and transfer of knowledge, they will be a statistic of my family name will be broke within three generations.
So what are the common characteristics of families that get this right, of people that are able to navigate this morass and create an enduring legacy beyond just the business sense?
And that's a great question. And it's going to be based on the family culture. So many of the families that I worked with, they either had an awareness and a desire to create a positive legacy, or they didn't. I tell a story in the book from probably the late 80s of that one gentleman that was worth $150 million back then. He had no interest in creating any type of real legacy. And, you know, I'm in the book, and I think we talked about it earlier. His response to me when I was talking about what his tax bill was likely going to be was, I started out with nothing, actually less than nothing. So the fact that my kids are going to get millions when I die is not my problem. So there was absolutely no interest in doing anything. And when you step back and look at that family, they didn't have the relationships that I want to have with my sons. And so it really boils down to, is there an awareness of what they want? And is there any desire to go to the inconvenience of creating it?
And how do you handle this really worrying concept that when you talk to many next gens and inheritors, they view the money as more of a burden than an opportunity?
The next gen views it as a burden?
Mm-hmm.
I have not seen that, to be honest.
Oh, really?
No, I see a lot of them that take it for granted. And I see a lot that, you know, this next gen, the millennials especially, there's the real big polarization. There's some that are literally looking for the handout. They're looking for the next deposit into their account. And then you've got these others that are entrepreneurial minded, and they're out here building businesses left and right. You know, so you've got the real big discrepancy between them. So those that are looking for a handout, the entitlement mentality, you know, that is a dangerous place to be. You know, that is a group that will burn through the resources and become a statistic. The other side, they're entrepreneurial minded. They'll take whatever they inherited and they will build a new business with it.
What about lessons learned from yourself in terms of how you created a value system and a culture within your own family? You mentioned your son. I know he's very entrepreneurial. He's done very well within the tech space. Any lessons learned or experience shared that you'd be willing to give?
Oh man. The first thing is, if my wife and I are on the same page, it changes everything within the dynamics of our family. And in the early years, I would travel extensively. I had 14 states, and just, like I said, I was gone a lot. And so we created, my wife and I created something we now call First Friday. We've been doing First Friday for about, well, over two decades. And it's just a simple process that every first Friday of the month, I kick out of the office around 1:30 or 2. We'll go to a quiet restaurant and we'll sit there from 2 to 5. And we'll just review our calendars. We'll review birthdays. We'll review the comp statements. We'll review the P&L. You know, so it's a business meeting from that 2 to 5, and then we'll turn over and have a really nice dinner. You know, but that is something that gets us on the same page, and that's where I think a lot of couples miss that is they don't have they might have a weekly date night, which is wonderful. I'm a definite proponent of that. This is different. It is literally having a business meeting with your spouse, and you go over things on a consistent basis. That's been asked for me so many times. If you don't mind, I'll share where to find it, but it's that form I put together as a template on my website. It's thelancewelch.com/First Friday. So it's not real complicated. But if anyone goes out there and gets that form, it's a free download, and it is worth its weight in gold. It really is.
Yeah. So this is actually something that you've documented and systematized and processed, and you've practiced it. How long have you been doing this?
At least 22, maybe 23 years.
Wow. Well, I encourage people to go check it out. I'll check it out myself. I'm curious if it's changed over the years, or
yeah,
I'm sure it's a living, breathing document in many ways, and everyone's going to be a little bit different, but you know, I think it's helpful to know what to do, but what are some don't do's, or what are some potholes not to step in when you're trying to do this?
Well, there's another one out there on the site too, as far as what to do. And then we get into something. I've got so many don'ts as a dad that I can look back on. But another thing that we did that was highly intentional, it's also been over 20 years. It's what we just call it the family vision cast. You know, when I was at the corporate level at the end of each year, the company brought us in and we did end of year reviews and a new year forecast. So I basically took what we did at a corporate level and I morphed it into a personal family document. So it was the same premise. Obviously, the questions were totally different. But it was just the very first time we did it, it was a one-page document and it had some very simple questions. What did we do in probably 1992? What did we do in 92 that we would love to do again? What were some highlights? What were some lessons learned? And I'm a huge proponent of using the right words. We didn't talk about what mistakes were made. That's a negative framework. Power versus Force is a great book to get into that. So not here, but what were lessons learned? And then what are some things we'd like to do this new year? So that one page document turned into, the last time we did it was in probably 2012 as a family, but it was a 15 page document at that point. It was put into a binder. We went to Gatlinburg, got a cabin for the weekend. The boys brought some girlfriends with them. And it was just one of those things that for over 20 years, we did a year in family vision cast. And that's different from the legacy retreat that we talked about earlier. The legacy retreat is really built for business reviews and intentional legacy building. The family vision cast is really a one-day type event. Now you can spread it out into a calendar or a cabin weekend type thing. But that form's out there too. And it's on the same website, thelancewelch.com vision cast. So it's there. But being consistent year after year, you know, the first Friday, consistent every month. I bet we hit at least 10 out of 12 months every year at doing that. The annual family vision cast, we did it every year. And it's something that now that the boys are older and they've started their own families, they're actually doing. So when you talk about how do you create that culture, it's consistency. You know, John Maxwell talks about consistency compounds. So whatever you do on a consistent basis, whether it's positive or negative, it will be compounded. You know, so from creating the culture, what do you want? What do you want it to look like? Reverse engineer it and then just be consistent with it. As far as, go ahead.
No, please.
No, I was just going to jump over into things not to do. But.
Well, I just was going to reinforce the consistency thing. I've been reflecting on that idea. I'm 41 and been an entrepreneur for a while now. And I really do think it's not necessarily the brute strength of the work, but it's the people that just keep showing up no matter how many times they get kicked in the teeth.
Yeah.
That long term, it really does show out, because, you know, there's somebody that I follow pretty closely that said that, you know, the moment that you want to give up is when most people do. And that's right. The moment that you should just double down and keep going. But it's hard, right? Easy to say this, but very difficult to put into practice, because, and I'm curious about what you think on, in the modern world with, you know, social media and the digital age, but the distractions and the noise just keep elevating, and it seems like everything else in the world is conspiring to keep you away from being that consistent.
Well, that's very true, but that's where knowing what you want and why you want it is a huge resource for you. With my coaching clients, there's a practice that I have every one of them do that helps address what you just described. We know there will always be distractions. There will always be chaotic moments. Those things, we can just bank on it. It's going to happen. But one meeting a week is what I expect all my clients to do. We call it a VIP meeting. Everyone knows what VIP stands for, but they usually think of VIP being someone else. In this case, the VIP is yourself. So 1 hour a week, I have all my clients, they have a meeting with themselves, and it's a thinking meeting. They go into that time with just blocking out the noise, getting away from the distractions, and they're looking for specific direction in maybe one or two areas that are causing a challenge. It's a very structured piece. We have key questions that I set them up with, but majority of the time when I first introduce that to them, they say, I just don't have time for that. And I'm like, you always have time for what's a priority. So it, you know, don't tell me it's not, you don't have time. It's like when people say they don't want to read a book, like, I don't have time, or it's not a priority. I'm good with you saying it's not a priority. I can live with that. But if I accept you telling me you don't have time, I'm just enabling, right? So being able to block that out is a very conscious, concerted effort that you get it on the calendar and you do it each week. Kind of like this today. We had this set up and at its appointment. If I would have no-showed you, what would that have said about my respect for you? It would have been a negative response, right? So when I set this meeting up for the VIP meeting for me, let's say it's on Fridays at 3:00. If I drop that meeting for anything, I'm sending myself that same message at a subconscious level that I'm really not that valuable. My time isn't that important. So one way to address the chaos and the distractions is to get this meeting on the calendar with yourself and be consistent with it.
Yeah, it's a great lesson, and goes towards this larger one that I wanted to ask about. I think one of the challenging issues with this whole concept of legacy building, for me at least, is it's kind of like self-work or self-actualization or taking agency over your life. It's hard for me because there is no destination. There's no point that I say, like, I've done it. I now have created this thing and the work product is out the door into the client. It's a never-ending process. How do you work with entrepreneurs and business owners through that idea that this is going to be something that they just work on forever?
If they have children, it's a little bit easier discussion. If they don't, you know, we have to find some other motivations for them, you know, something that they can measure. And your legacy is really hard to measure, kind of like what you just said. It's not like I can put an ROI number or percent to it. How do you know if the legacy is going the right direction? You know, a lot of it is, what do your kids say about you? In my case, being an empty nester, having adult children, we are so fortunate. We're blessed to have really, really good relationships with our kids. And I'd take that for granted sometimes until I talked to another guy my age. I'm 58, and they don't have a great relationship with their kids. And it's like that point, I can look back and say, okay, well, some of the things that we did must have been the right things. It must have gotten us on track. That doesn't mean to say if I don't have a good relationship with my kids now that it's too late. There's always, as long as I'm still breathing, there's opportunity for me to continue growing. I've always told my boys, until the coffin lid closes, I'm going to be growing and I'm going to be pursuing. And it's like my oldest is 35, my youngest is 30. And what's amazing, and even though they're all young men, they love being pursued by their dad. They love it when I will reach out to them for coffee or for going to lunch. And, you know, I've got grandkids now. That is the greatest thing since sliced bread, having grandkids around. But being able to look at your heirs and be intentional about making sure that they have, I call it in the book, stacked in their favor. There are no guarantees that what I do or you do to prepare our children for a great future, that they're going to take advantage of it. They can walk away. I mean, that's the interesting thing about free will. But when you are intentional about positioning them, what I used to call launch, to leave the house well, that to me is just an amazing reward to watch them succeed and leave the house. I mean, I've got grown men, they're out on their own, paying their own way. They're none of them living in my basement. That's a good thing.
Yeah. I've started to try to, now that you've been through this, my boys are 11 and 8, and it's cliche, but I think it's just light speed. Right. And I try to reframe where it used to be so sad that it's no longer this age of X, but now it's a reframe of, you've done a good job. Like, they're moving on to the next level of the game, and you know that you're doing well. This is just a different season and chapter of life. And that's been really helpful to me. Yeah. So I don't get caught up in the past.
Well, this book really is, it's chock full of ways that you can build relationships with your kids, regardless of their age. When we very first got started on this, it was 9/11. I'm sure that when you hear the word 9/11, it takes you back. Every time I say the word, I can see it in people's body language. It hits a nerve. When that happened was when we very first started with our boys as far as being intentional. And I think they were like 12, 9, and 7, somewhere in that range. And my wife was concerned about how were they going to process what just happened. The youngest one, he processed it just fine. It didn't mean anything. The 12-year-old had more questions, but I don't know if you remember, this is going way back, but the old clay chimenea, it was like the old version of a fire pit. Mm. It was a clay version, kind of looked like it had a chimney. But I went out and bought a chimenea, and we would set out around that fire, and we had what we called fireside chats. Because what we learned with boys anyway, if I offered food and fire, they'd sit and talk for hours. Otherwise, their energy level was so high, being able to sit down and build those relationships just wasn't going to happen. But there's a lot of examples like that in the book, regardless of the age. You know, now that my sons are much older, obviously the activities look a lot different, but you know, one thing they still love, food and fire.
Yeah. Some things are consistent for boys across the millennia. Well, Lance, I want to thank you so much for joining us. For our listeners, please leave us a review and a rating. Let us know your favorite part of the conversation. If people are interested in engaging with you about the book or the services you provide, what's the best way for them to find out more?
There is a booking app on my website. So thelancewelch.com. Scroll all the way to the bottom. There are the free resources that we've already talked about, the Vision Cast, the Legacy Retreat template is out there as well. And the First Friday. So there's three really good resources. They're all free. And then there's a booking app at the bottom, and would love to connect, see if I can help with Legacy Retreat or any of the others.
Absolutely. And a question we ask people that come on the show, do you have a daily practice that helps bring peace to your life?
I have a very structured morning routine. I change it about every quarter to 6 months to keep it fresh. One of the things that what I've noticed is you can have a really good routine that gets stale. And there's a concept called push-pull. push target is where I feel like I'm obligated to continue. A pull target is so compelling, I want to continue it. So when I change that morning routine up, keep it fresh, it acts more as a push. I'm sorry, it acts more of a pull. And that is one of the things that helps keep me trapped.
What's the current routine? You don't leave us hanging.
No. Get up at 5:15 or before. So I've been doing this long enough. There is no alarm. And it's a composite of a bunch of different people's strategies. But do you remember the colonel or the admiral that did Make Your Bed in that video that went viral?
Yeah.
You know, so the premise of that is you have some early quick wins. You know, so the first one on my list, my list is make my half of the bed. My wife's not getting up that early at all. So I make my half of the bed. So I have I take my morning supplements. I make my coffee. I get cleaned up. So I have a good morning routine, a morning devotional that I read every morning. But it's set up so that I actually check it off every day, because I start my day off with small wins and get myself headed in the right direction every morning.
Love it. I'm an early riser myself. That's great. Well, Lance, thanks so much for joining us. Best of luck with the book, and definitely encourage people to reach out and learn more about the resources that you have available for them. So thank you for joining us.
I appreciate you having me. Appreciate it.